Hey guys, Tim here. Wanted to jump in and give you an opportunity. You can support our show. I don't know if you know this, but the number one way podcasts spread and grow is through referrals. It's through people telling their friends, hey, I found this podcast and I love it and I think you'll love it too. And so if you've been listening to this show for a while and you love it, share it with your friends. Tell everybody you know about it. I'm sure a lot of you are already doing that, but maybe you're not. Send a link. Send us something out to one of your friends. All the apps make that super easy. Just share it. And if this is your first time listening to this show, do that too. Just give it a shot. Send it to some people. Act like you love it and then listen to it. And then maybe you'll regret it. Maybe you won't. Who knows? Maybe it pays off for you. But yeah, just go ahead real quick before this episode starts. Hit share. Tell your friends about it. And then that will go a long way to help this show grow and continue to be here for the next 70 years. We're not going to live that long.
Hey, man.
What's up?
Have you ever heard of BlackRock?
BlackRock?
Yeah.
I think it's called Obsidian, right? What is it called? What is that? What is
Obsidian.
Obsidian, that's right.
Yeah. No, it's not that.
Yeah, they sell it as like a, for whatever reason, it's the really expensive thing at the gift shop.
Yeah, because it's cool. It sounds cool. Obsidian.
Obsidian sounds super
it
neat.
It sounds valuable.
Yeah, that's why I'm naming my kid Obsidian.
I want you to know that you sound valuable to me as my child. That's it.
Yeah.
I just want you to know you sound valuable.
Obsidian, and then this is your brother Absurdian, who is an absolute moron. We hate him. And
Absurdian. Hi, welcome to Jamba Juice, a subsidiary of BlackRock.
He talks about the power of sobbing.
I don't even know what we were talking about.
Why are we hearing reports that our money is just flying over the Pacific Northwest?
I'm just mad about Applebee's now.
To which someone in a super suit responded and said, are you in trouble?
Things I learned last night.
An Absurdian sounds like what you would call a comedian, you know, if he were like, you know, be like, look, this guy's an Absurdian.
Okay. BlackRock is a...
An Absurdian sound... Okay, BlackRock is what?
BlackRock is an investment firm.
Okay. An investment firm?
Yeah, they're an investment firm.
Okay. I was going to say they sound like a sketchy company.
Well, it's...
Okay, that's what I was like. I was like, it sounds like a technology company that like went sideways or something, but yeah. Like Black Mirror.
Yeah,
but BlackRock is an investment company that did some sketchy stuff.
Yeah, they're an investment firm that's the largest in the world, and you've never heard of them. And there's probably a reason for it.
Because they're buying all the houses.
Yeah, actually.
For real?
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Oh! I knew some sketchy company was doing it, BlackRock.
Yeah, so BlackRock, they are the largest investment firm in the world. They manage $9 trillion
where are
in
they
assets.
Based? $9 trillion?
They manage $9 trillion in assets based out of New York. And you've never heard of them, which is kind of wild. So
they're under the radar.
Yeah. They refer to it as the world's largest shadow bank, which is fair. Which we can talk about that in a second. Also, some people say they control the world because they control $9 trillion in assets, which is...
How much is there in assets? What's the total value of assets in the world?
Earth value.
I guarantee there's a metric on it somewhere.
So the Earth, according to... The University of California is worth $5 quadrillion.
Wow.
Oh, but this one from Business Insider says it's only $80 trillion. So who do you trust?
So they own a tenth of the world.
Yeah.
According to Business Insider.
According to Business Insider. Durr.
Inside. Durr.
Yeah, so they own a lot, pretty much. Well, they don't own that. They manage all that assets. They own a lot of assets as well, but they manage $9 trillion in assets.
Okay.
Their total asset value of their own company is $165 billion.
That's insane.
But yeah, so they manage $9 trillion. So for a business like this?
What?
For a business like this, we need an origin story. So let's talk about...
Let's take it back.
BlackRock was born in a small town in Texas, in the shadows of Texas.
Oh my gosh. I hope whenever I ask you where you're, like, you know, not that I would ask you, I'll be there. But like when someone's like, you know, where was your kid born? You'll go, their origin story is. And they're like, bro, sorry I asked.
Like, oh, is this a sore topic for
and
you?
And Bree's just there like, no, it's a bit he it's does.
He thinks it's funny.
Does she hate your bits?
Oh, she hates them so much.
Yeah, dude. I'm tired of dating girls that hate my bits. She hates my bits. Hey, we should make a sketch show called Bit Off More Than You Can Chew.
Oh my god. Oh jeez, that got me good.
Oh. Tim's noises today are very odd to me. Go ahead.
The last one was like when you ask like, your grandma to tell a story from the 30s.
She's like, oh, jeez. Because it used to be, ah. And now she's old. So now it's, oh. So BlackRock.
BlackRock.
Founded.
Was founded by a guy named Larry Fink.
Dude, I don't trust him already.
Who?
He sounds like a guy who's like an art, like a manager for an actor in the 1930s.
Yeah,
he's actually. Like, yeah, I am Larry Fink.
I'm Larry Fink. Take a headshot.
I do that radio voice a lot, like that old time radio.
You're pretty good at it.
Yeah, well, you know.
Do you practice?
You know.
So Larry, let me
right
tell you
now, what I do in the shower is, you know, because some people sing in the shower.
Yeah.
I don't practice my radio voice. I'm pretty good at it. I don't need to practice anymore.
Okay.
But right now, what I do is I just stand there and I'm just like, watch, and then I just go. Previously on Big Brother. That's all I do.
Over and over?
Like a lot.
You're in the shower. You'll say it 20 times in one shower.
Well, I'll do that, and then I'll just go, I'll also go, who will win the power of veto? And will it be used to save either Sarah Beth or Brittany? Find out Wednesday at 8, 7 Central.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting better at that one.
I'm getting better at it, you know? I'm
practicing. Perfect.
Yeah, well...
Are you utilizing your shower time?
Okay, are you using your shower time like Gary V, who straight up just says that he pictures one of his family members getting shot in the face? Have you seen that clip?
I have not.
He talks about the power of sobbing.
Oh, God.
And he says that it creates emotional health. And so he's straight up, like, in an interview, he's doing his whole holding the mic thing aggressively. Just like, you know, like, yeah, every morning, I imagine one of my closest family members getting shot in the face. And then I just cry.
No, you don't.
That's what he says. And I'm like, I don't know. That sounds like you want to shoot your family members in the face.
Sounds like you're a sociopath.
Sounds like you're a murderer waiting to happen.
Sounds like we should put you somewhere.
Yeah. Gary Vigilante.
Gary Very Dangerous.
So Larry Fink.
Larry Fink. He got to start in 1976 with a company called First Boston after he got a degree in politics. And so he worked for this company called First Boston. It was an investment bank.
Okay.
He eventually took control of their bond department. And while he was there, he created what's known as the mortgage-backed security, which is a very famous security and investing.
That worked out really well
in
2008.
Yes. So that is the backbone of the mortgage crisis in 2008. He was the guy who invented that. But at the time, people didn't know that was coming. And he was lauded as this hero of investing. So he quickly rose to prominence in the field. And he was...
Can you give us a rundown of what that looks like?
Yeah, so every time you walk in a room, they play John Cena's song.
No, I meant the, can you tell the people? I hate that I tried to interrupt you and you just pushed through. Say John Travolta walks in?
No, I said you walk in. You walk in a room and they play that every time you walk in.
Oh, okay. Golly, dude. He was like, they're hiring John Travolta. No, I'm of the mortgage-backed loans. Like, can you give a rundown of what did he invent?
Yeah, so basically, a mortgage-backed security kind of bundles a bunch of debt or loans. So mortgages were the biggest one, and they were the most like valuable because they were seen as the safest.
Yeah.
But
because people are going to pay them.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, even things like student loans, just regular.
So if you're a bank and you've got that money out, mm-hmm. you can bundle it together.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it goes into a pool, and then investors could buy shares in that security. And so what it does is it kind of lets you leverage your loan as almost like a stock. And so then you can have other people yes. pay it. And so you have that money on hand and then the other people are still paying it back. So it seemed much safer than a regular loan because you don't have the risk of, oh, it doesn't get paid back. It's going to get paid back. You're going to get the interest on it most likely because people almost always pay back their mortgages.
Right.
But you also can have people invest in that mortgage and then you make money off of it even more. And so it was revolutionary at the time. And it rose him to this prominence. He eventually earned First Boston $1 billion. So he was a very successful
in the 80s.
Yeah. In the 70s and early 80s.
That's a lot of money for then.
Mm-hmm. He was very, very successful in the bank until 1986 when, he made a poor decision and he lost the company $100 million. And he was ousted, lost his job, and couldn't find another job in finance. He was like blacklisted.
Because he lost $100 million?
Yeah.
Did he just misplace it?
Like, can you put this in the vault right there? And he's like,
yeah, I'll do that.
Yeah. And then he leaves the...
Why are we hearing reports that our money is just flying over the Pacific Northwest right now? Cash flying everywhere.
That's not where I was going to go with that. I was going to go with, he gets called the next weekend into his manager's office. And he's like, Larry, I have a question for you. And he's like, yeah. He's like, it's come to my attention from another source within the company that after we gave you that briefcase with $100 million in it, big briefcase. That's another thing.
But it's not, though. It's just a check. You know, it's just like it's a normal size brief, but it's not cash.
Like we got a report from another employee that they saw you walking out of the office that day, and they said, and I quote, he kicked open the doors and then he proceeded to yell.
To which someone in a super suit responded and said, are you in trouble? And then he said, no, I'm high on life. Mutual combat. You know?
That's where Phoenix got it. He's like, wait, I can do that?
So you've not only invented...
he invented...
mortgage-based securities, but also mutual combat. This guy's a revolutionary.
So he
lost $100 million, got fired, obviously.
Yeah.
Can't find another job because you go into a job and they're like, wow, that's really impressive. They're going down your resume. And you just put on there in text, lost $100 million. Like you just you put on there, created mortgage-based securities, all this stuff. And they're just going like, oh, yeah, look at this. Oh. We're sorry, Mr. Fink. I don't think we have an opportunity for you anymore. And he's just there with his briefcase of money.
Hey, does this, it opens up the briefcase, does this help?
Like it's an empty briefcase. It's just got a large.
Sir, we can't do anything with that check. Yeah, pretty much actually. He calls up his friend, and they buy into a company called Blackstone. They created this company called Blackstone.
Okay.
And basically, it was the company he worked for, but he did it himself. And so they took out a $5 million line of credit, started this company, things are going great. Except for Larry has very different systems he runs by. The finance world operates a certain way. Larry operates a different way.
Okay.
For example, he really believed that the people in the company, you need the best people in the world working in your company. And to do that, you need to incentivize them properly. So he would give away major shares in the company to new hires to incentivize them to work for him.
Hey, if you come here, we'll give you 86% of the company.
If you can work here, the company's yours. You can have it.
You can seriously just take it.
It's yours. Yeah, so
that's how I got hired.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened to me.
That's how it became mine. And now it is yours.
Now it's yours. So, but that didn't go over well with the team. And after a couple years of this, it basically became this thing where it was like, hey, you got to stop. Like, you can't keep giving that away. Because it got to the point where the company only owned 35%. Like,
yeah,
the rest of it, the rest of that 75% was
employees
given off to employees. And so the board was like, hey, we can't do this anymore. He disagreed. There ended up being a lot of arguments between him and the other founder. And he eventually buys everybody else out. And it's like, this is my company now. And we're calling it BlackRock.
He's like, yeah, we got to change this up. And they're like, what are you going to do? BlackRock. I'm like, okay.
It's the same. You know that, right?
No, it's not the same. All right, it's the difference between obsidian and absurdian, okay?
Which is very different.
If you don't know, they're different words. All right, go ahead, Tim Rock.
Tillin'! Live from the Rhino in Kansas City.
Kansas City!
Monster trucks, ice cream, funny stuff. You don't want to miss it.
Buy tickets, Dillon.com.
That'll work too.
Can we get a monster truck?
Maybe.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. This time of year is interesting because everybody's kind of coming out of their winter hibernation and wanting to go do stuff. And if you're anything like me, that's not great. Not because you don't like your family or you don't like your friends or anything like that, but because your social battery drains pretty easily and you need more time to recharge than a lot of other people in your life. Last summer, I was not great at this. I let myself do way too much and I got really, really drained and it was a rough experience all around. Luckily, I've got a therapist who does a great job helping me set my boundaries and keeping me accountable to my boundaries, especially in areas like this. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's completely online, it's flexible, it's convenient, and it fits literally any schedule. It's really easy to sign up. All you got to do is fill out a brief questionnaire, and you'll get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Tillin today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Tillin, TILLN. Thanks again to BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode.
Okay. They end up investing.
You should name your kid Corner.
I hate that.
You hate that it's a good idea.
I hate that because it's dumb.
Yeah, just this is my kid Corner.
Yeah,
that's Cornerstone.
I hate that. I hate that so much.
Okay.
They position themselves different than every other investor in the world, pretty much.
The other option is to hyphenate their last name, you know, to be like
Stone Rock.
No, I was going to be like Stone Pizza, like a Stone. What do they call that?
Stone Oven.
Stone Oven Pizza.
Stone Oven Pizza.
Yeah.
Black Stone Oven Pizza.
Corner Stone Oven Pizza. Oven Pizza is his. You get it. You get it. We can toy with it. We could talk about it later.
Yeah. We just have to meet someone with the last name Oven Pizza.
Yeah. 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 People were like, how did you come up with that last name? It was a bit.
It was a bit. So they positioned themselves different than any other investment company, because what they did is they said, hey, we're going to position ourselves in a place where instead of trying to maximize profits, we're going to go the opposite direction. We're going to say, hey, we're going to be ready for risk. And so they're at a point where if something crazy happened, they're fine, is the way they set it up. They weren't so much like, hey, we're going to make a ton of money. They said, we're going to make a lot of money.
Interesting.
And it's going to stay safe no matter what happens.
Okay.
And so they were really, really big on risk. They developed...
On minimizing risk?
Minimizing risk.
Yeah, because he lost $100 million one time. That's, like, that you'd think that'd be a priority.
That was pretty bad.
Yeah, he's like, that was rough.
Yeah, and so...
So how do you do that then?
I don't know.
I don't know. If I knew, I would own it. I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, ask Larry.
We're over here talking about stone oven pizza last names. I'm not a billionaire.
So they had systems in place to be able to check all the possible scenarios for their clients, basically.
Okay.
And say, here's all the possible scenarios. Here's our investment plan. We're going to kick out the ones that look like they're going to...
Could potentially go that, yeah.
Explode. And we're going to keep you in the stuff that is very low risk. And they would go to their clients, and that was what they would offer them. They would say, hey, we're going to come do a risk assessment of your company and help change your portfolio accordingly. So that way, when risky situations come, you're fine. And people paid them a lot of money to do that. Which meant in 2008, they were the only financial institution that was not harmed by the crisis, because they were in a position.
Really? He created the thing that caused the problem, but he didn't suffer the consequences of that problem.
Exactly. And because of two reasons. One, they were the only company that was set up internally to be able to withstand risk like that, a downfall like that. But also, when the downfall started, everybody came to him and were like, hey, how much money do we have to give you to fix this? And they just paid him a ton of money to go through their portfolio.
They're like, hey, you made this thing.
Yeah. Including the U.S. government.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, yeah.
The government came to Larry when they did their bailout, and they said, hey, BlackRock is going to put together our bailout program. And they were like, we need you to figure out the most important institutions, and we need you to craft this system to bail out all these banks. Because one, they were like, you're the only one that's not harmed, so you obviously know what you're doing. Two, we're... the government, so we obviously don't know what we're doing, so it's a good match.
Good match.
Good match. Three, you came up with this idea that is exploding, so clearly you should know how to fix it. Four,
I don't think that's a good logic, though, of like, this was your idea, so you should also know how to fix it. And it's like, yeah, I mean, it was my idea to bring wolves to the 12-year-old birthday party, but I don't know what to do now.
How to get them out?
That's ripping kids apart. I don't know.
I can't get them out of here.
You know how hard it was to get them here?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know a wolf guy?
Do you have a wolf guy?
That sounds like something a youth pastor would ask, though.
Yeah.
Anybody got a wolf guy?
Anybody got a wolf guy in here? So the U.S. Basically gave BlackRock $130 billion to figure out the debt crisis, some of which they got to keep, but most of which they had to allocate.
Wow.
The issue with this was it was a massive conflict of interest.
If they paid me that much, I could probably figure it out.
I could probably fix this. Well, no, the issue was this was a giant conflict of interest because who were their clients? The biggest financial institutions.
You sound like a smoker right now. Whatever is going on with your voice, you got to take some
cat.
More. Is it my cat?
Yeah.
Because whatever, you're just like, yeah, I mean, they gave him $100. I was like, bro, are you doing like a, what are you doing? Yeah, so anyway, they gave him a. Huh.
When we move into a new studio, I'm going to sound like a new man.
I'm going to sound like a new man. I'll talk like this too, so you don't feel as left out. Thanks. Yeah, I got you. The whole episode.
Sweet, appreciate it.
Okay, but imagine, you know how grating this is on your brain right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, this is what I'm going through over here. It's like the whole time, you're just like, they gave him $130 billion. Well, you're like a lot of money, but like, you know, for that amount, I could figure it out.
Okay, so here's
I'm just saying harder.
This was...
Be less allergic to cats. Pray it away.
Lord, I come to you a sinner, and I humbly repent of my sins.
Is that how you pray, dude? No, that's why you got fired from that church. They were like, this guy prays weird. Like, dude, does he even know how to do this?
They have to like submit an official document for the firing, and it's like,
speaking of, though,
why Praise Weird.
Praise Weird. And they wrote it P-R-A-I-S-E Weird. Praise. Praise Weird. And so I was like, wait, no, no, no. I said he prays weird. And so I was like, that's what I wrote.
He's like, I can't change
No. Like he, the way he prays. No, I hear you.
I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
I wrote the same
P-R-A-I-S-E.
thing.
Praise and worship. Yeah. Whoa. I love praise and worships.
I think...
Hold on. Wait, what?
Dude, what did you just say? They talk about it in the book praise of Revelations.
Oh my gosh.
This is one of my favorite psalms.
Psalms.
Yeah.
Anyways. Yeah.
Did you have another bit?
Yeah, no, so, you know, someone was like, hey, where's the bathroom here? Well, those are our first, second, and third Johns over there. So it wasn't a good one, but it's all right. All right, the book of James's.
Third Corinthians.
That sounds better. We just had to laugh it out a little bit, you know? Speak from your diaphragm.
So there was
$130
billion
to allocate
across all these financial institutions.
Okay.
The issue was BlackRock managed.
You can tell Tim is done with a bit when he pushes through.
They managed the funds of all of these financial institutions.
Yeah.
So they basically got to decide
what happens to all of them.
What happens with the money? Who do we want to bail out? We're going to bail out our clients.
Not want to? Yeah.
So they just went and they gave the money to the people who were giving money to them.
We allocated. We did what the government told us to do.
Exactly.
We just happened to do it for all the people we already had an interest in.
Yeah. And they said the government hired us because we know best and we know which of these have the biggest impact.
So then you get new clients because they're like, well, the government trusts them.
Yeah. And so, yeah. So they, in 2009, they became the number one asset manager in the world.
Wow.
And at the time they were managing, gosh, I think that's when they went over $1 trillion in assets.
Wow.
And so made them the largest in the world, massive, massive company, right?
Yeah. And with the added fact that everyone else is tanking hard.
Yes, exactly. Wow. And so everybody starts coming to them and is like, hey, we need you to risk manage us. All of a sudden that became all the rage.
Did they do the 2008 bailouts the same way they did the 2020 bailout stuff where they're just printing money?
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everybody came to them, we're like, manage our risk portfolio or whatever. And they developed this system called Aladdin, which is a network of 5,000 computers that basically did what they did before.
Aladdin?
But a computer does it. Yeah. And so it just manages.
Which is also the food company from our college.
Yeah, it's both. It's got
they do a lot of stuff.
They operate in two verticals.
Yeah, they were like, you know what we should get into? College dining. You know, Aladdin food services.
The people, they got to pay for it. You know?
Yeah.
They can't not, the students. So, and I mean, the government's paying for it.
They can't not, a lot. You know, they can't, you can't have a school that's a fire fest. You know, what if you got a fire festival college edition? That sounds, that sounds like one of those like American Pie movies.
It does.
It's like
it
fire does. Festival college.
College. Fire fest university. They developed this Aladdin software, and the software, this isn't like a streaming subscription where you're paying $9.99 a month.
Yeah.
This is a $140 million a year investment.
Per company?
Per company. And companies are lining up to get this Aladdin software to help them manage their risk.
We gotta get into this stuff.
Which to me, I'm going to go out on a limb. Let me go out on a limb.
Yeah.
If you're going to spend $140 million to pay a company to help
a year.
You be less risky, I would just say keep the $140 million and make better choices.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, like, but when you're looking
get at the some envelopes, but the envelopes are so much cheaper.
But I'm saying the revenue that they're doing, I mean, let's say that things fall apart, $140 million that year in savings is not going to save them.
Yeah, it's true. For a lot of these companies, $140 million is a drop in the pan. And so, they're exploding throughout the 2000s.
Because what does Facebook make a day?
Let's take a look.
Because I remember whenever they got in trouble for boosting video views and stuff, their fine was pretty big. But what's their revenue a day?
$21.5 million.
Yeah, they had to pay a $10 million fine.
Oh yeah,
so it's like, and it's like, oh, like they just give half a day's stuff.
Yeah, that's crazy.
You know,
that's not bad. So they blew up in the 2010s.
Right.
Guess what happened?
2020.
And they, again, the only institution that is not harmed by the 2020 crisis in March.
Well, I don't know. The PGA wasn't either, though. Do you know what I'm talking about?
That they like still...
Did you remember that the PGA took out pandemic insurance in like 2003?
Well, that's weird.
Yeah.
They were like, yeah, we're...
Well, because George W. Bush was warning about it. George W. Bush was like, guys, we are not prepared for a pandemic if it happens. I remember that. So the PGA took out pandemic insurance. I looked this up how much they got out, the PGA pandemic insurance, because I think they paid... I think they got out like $17 million last year. So, I don't know. It may be way more than that, actually, but I'm thinking about it. That might have been what they paid in.
I'm not finding PGA. I'm finding Wimbledon.
Oh, the tennis thing?
Yeah.
Did they do it then? Was I wrong about PGA? Yeah, was it Wimbledon?
Maybe Wimbledon took out $141 million.
Last year?
Yeah.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking of then.
That's insane.
It was one of the elites.
Yeah,
sports. That's crazy. One of the superiors.
Yeah, one of the better than us. Sis.
Yeah. That's like the added bonus of playing those games.
Yeah.
Is that you can sit there and know there's people in the world who don't play this game. And you say it like that too. And people are like, bro, we live in Arkansas. You know, like this course is closed 8 months out of the year. Maybe calm down. You know what, Tillin? We're not just a podcast. We're a ministry. And our hope is to continue to reach more people with the light and the joy of the Lord. Because remember, at the center of all this, the core of who we are, our main objective is to fiddle off the devil. If you want to help support us in that ministry, please join us on Patreon, where you'll get ad-free episodes, exclusive merchandise, a Discord channel, where we can discuss everything you want to talk about, your dreams, your ideas, your problems. Text Tillin to 66866. Do you feel that relief? Anyway, here's another advertisement.
So, in 2020, the crisis hits.
Their companies survive.
They're unaffected. And yeah, anybody who needed some help went to them, paid them more. And so they made a killing in 2020. And it pushed them up to $9.5 trillion in assets that they're managing, which is unbelievable. Now, that's not money that they have, but they're
managing those
things, which is crazy. And so it's led a lot of people to start to point the finger at them and say, hey, this is a monopoly. These people control everything because they make the decisions on how money moves. And so this is part of why the GameStop thing was such a big deal, because these were the people who before could decide what happens in the stock market. They could say, hey, we're going to move this money to this fund and it's going to change everything in the market, because they just had such an insane quantity that they were managing. They could run anything.
But they don't own it, so they're not technically a monopoly.
Technically, no. Yeah, and that's what's so complicated.
Is that technically what they're doing is allowed.
Yeah, and they don't have as many checks and balances as a lot of institutions, because they're not a bank. They're what's called a shadow bank.
Mm.
So they're not FDIC insured. They don't take deposits. They just manage funds. And so...
Which, I was speaking of shadow banks, did I tell you about the Starbucks shadow bank?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that what it was? Are you going to get to that?
No, you can tell that.
Oh, because the money you put on a Starbucks card is then you're exchanging your money for Starbucks credit money.
Yeah.
So if you've got $15 on your app,
yeah,
then you just gave Starbucks $15 that now they can take loans out as an asset.
Yep, yep.
You know, so they have at any given time $1.2 billion on the app.
On the app.
And that they can take out loans and leverage that money and move their shares as if that is part of their... It's crazy to me.
Yeah, that's... I mean,
they can give out loans. They can do all that. You know, they can manage that money. It's
really wild.
It's bonkers.
Yeah, and so
that's why every business is trying to do apps now.
Yeah, they're let's put gift cards on apps. Gift cards on apps.
You can order apps on our app. That's Applebee's.
Applebee's.
Get the Applebee's, right, guys? I mean, hey, if your marketing team sees this, that's free.
That's,
you know?
Yeah, free.
It's not free. It's, you know, give me boneless wings, but you get it. You don't want to go to Applebee's
bring
after this?
Bring back our sauce. Bring you back,
do want Applebee's after
bring back
this.
The sauce. The hot, dry rub.
Too bad the one next to me is just torn down.
Have I ever read my Applebee's letter on the podcast?
No. Dang it. I'm so mad that you just brought that up.
Why?
Because I was going to insert line after line after line.
Oh, from my...
I've already done like two of them.
Did you really?
Yeah, and I was going to chomp it all together.
And then put together the whole thing.
It was going to be like me in different episodes, subtly reading your entire...
Have you
entire,
been doing this for a long time?
I thought about the idea when you sent it to me. And then like I had thrown in some of them and I kind of forgot for a little while. And then I threw in, so like, I was just,
you've been
dang
sprinkling
it.
Them in.
Yeah, I might still do it.
Wow.
Yeah, because I've got it on my phone.
I'm impressed. Well, I feel like we have to give some context now.
No.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, you can. I'm really bummed about that. That's like if one day you were like, do I only have four fingers in this thumbnail? You know, that's like one of those things that I really thought was going to pay off in a little while. Dang
yikes.
It.
Yikes. Well, I'm sorry.
That's okay. So tell about your Applebee's letter.
Yeah. So if you don't know,
Tim's obsessed with the buffalo. They did buffalo sauce and dry rub on it.
Yeah. It was this like, it was, so they had their hot sauce, right?
Right.
But they had a sauce that was like, it was their buffalo, but they also dry rubbed it before they did. I don't know. Like it was crazy. It was awesome. And I loved it.
Because we used to go to Applebee's a lot.
Yeah, in college, we would go every week. Yeah. We were there every week, like every Wednesday night.
Yeah, that's how you and your wife like got close.
That's where we decided that's where we decided to mace me.
Did we decide at Applebee's?
We decided at Applebee's.
And we went home and did it.
Well, we decided at Applebee's and we're like, yeah, let's do it.
Because we used to sit in that crescent booth, right? Mm-hmm. And it was funny because, you know, Tim and Bree started on opposite ends and they just slowly, mm-hmm. you know, kind of...
looped around the crescent.
And then all of a sudden they were sitting next to each other and we were all like, oh shoot, I guess they're
something happening here.
Are y'all touching mouths, you know? And
I hate that.
That's how I ask people if they're dating.
So anyways, one day they took away
and we were like, you all touching mouths? And they were like, no, you know.
All right, on
look
March,
how uncomfortable he is. I'm
on March
sorry.
18th 2018 at 8:58 p.m.
What are you?
I went to Applebee's and I tried to order those boneless wings. This is after we moved. We're in Kansas City now, and I ordered those boneless wings. They're like, sorry, we don't have that sauce anymore, and I was crushed. And so I ordered, I don't know, a burger or something random,
something dumb from
and
Applebee's.
We're in a big group. We went with like a group from church. We're in a big group.
And when Tim gets mad, it's hard to hold it in for him.
And
you know.
I pulled out my phone and on my notes app, I wrote a letter to Applebee's that I later sent to them. And here's what it says. Dear Applebee's, it is with a heavy heart today that I write you. I have been a faithful Applebee's customer for years. I watched as one by one my friends and family began to bash Applebee's and turn their back on the bees. But I remained faithful and I defended you passionately. A couple years ago, I started the hashtag Save the Bees to do my part in making Applebee's the Amazon of the restaurant industry. It didn't take off, but it's the thought that counts. But today, the worst news was given to me. Your hot buffalo sauce has been taken off the menu. This hot buffalo sauce was unlike anything I've ever experienced. The dry rub that sits underneath the glorious sauce created a dry, wet experience that could salivate the mouths of people for miles. Through thick and thin, this recipe has been there for me. I firmly believe that I never would have made it through my bachelor's degree if it weren't for the support that I received from your hot buffalo sauce. Today, a piece of me died. Today, only you hold the power to resurrect that piece of me that desperately strives for new life. Applebee's, I love you. I always have. I've defended you when no one else has, and I intend to continue. But this, I don't know if I can get over this. I don't know if I could return to an Applebee's again. Our lives together will never be the same. But I hope, no, I pray, that we... that we could reach some sort of point of reconciliation and repair one of the most influential relationships in my life. Your biggest supporter, Tim Stone.
Yeah, I can't believe you wrote that in our yearbook. Here's what I know is that their marketing department got to Dear Applebee's and then they just shut the email. Like, they just closed it. They're like, all right.
I got a reply that was literally like, it was
the canned response about the sauce.
It was like, thanks, Tim. Or thanks Tim for reaching out. Sometimes quarterly we assess how our menu items are doing, and sometimes menu items need to be taken off or added. They're like, keep checking back. Maybe someday it'll be back. And I was like, I emailed him back and I was like, I will never.
You email back.
Keep checking back. I won't be.
Dear Applebee's, thank you for this thoughtful response. After prayerful consideration, I will probably not be joining. I know it's water, but please don't spit it on my carpet. After prayerful consideration, I will not be returning to any of your locations. I will, however, email the store managers once a month through my new MailChimp account. I'm capped at 2,000 for the free version. I am not willing to pay more. So please give me the contact info for all 2,000 of your stores. I do believe this is the reason your business is declining and you're closing your locations. This is what happens. Tim gets water in his mouth and I just try to keep going. Me and my wife decided that we were going to get married here. I almost proposed at Applebee's.
That's why we relate to my proposal, actually.
Hey, we're not bringing it up.
Okay, fine. Let's talk about
it. I honestly thought they needed more time. That's why I did that. I ordered dessert. That's all it was. That's literally all it is. Yeah, and they're mad about it. I thought they needed more time.
All right, whatever, man.
And you guys blame that girl I was with.
Yeah, I mean.
There was a period where I was just bringing girls on double dates with Tim and Bree to see if they would like one of them.
Yeah.
And they never did. And like at this point, they've just been like, Reagan's been around long enough, I guess. They just didn't like her either, though.
At this point, we have to like her, so.
Yeah.
So anyways, I don't even remember what we were talking about. What is BlackRock? So yeah, they manage a lot of money. It's. I'm just mad about Applebee's now.
No, they just have a lot of assets. They manage these companies. They, you know, they're a monopoly, but technically they're okay. Yeah. That's where we were. We got from apps to apps.
There we go. That's right.
So they're a shadow bank.
They're a shadow bank. Here's the thing. Here's what happened in 2020, though. So BlackRock, the company, they saw what was going on in
China.
No, the world.
Oh.
And they said, hey, the housing market right now is wild.
Oh, and yeah. So they're like, this is a safe bet.
They just bought all the houses.
As many, they're going in like 20-30% over, aren't they?
Yeah, they're coming in way over. They're going in these bidding wars that normal people can never win with them.
Right.
And they're just, yeah, they're coming in.
They're outbidding on homes. Over. And then that way they're going to try to resell them. Mm-hmm. Or I don't think they're going to rent them.
I doubt that. I think
I think they're just going to hold on to them and sell them. Yeah. And so that dream house that you got outbid on, and then not you, but I'm saying like if you were going for a house, you got outbid on it, and then like 3 months later you drive by and still no one lives there.
Yeah,
like, I don't understand. It's because an investment company bought it.
Yeah, like for example, there was a new housing development that went up in a town called Conroe, Texas, and it's a
Conroe,
bunch of
Conroe, but okay,
Conroe.
It's in Houston.
A bunch of buyers were touring the homes, like looking for making offers.
Yeah.
BlackRock bought every single house in the housing development. It's an empty housing development because they own all the houses. And they're doing this across the country. They're just buying as many houses as they can. And a bunch of people are up in arms about it.
Then all we're doing is sitting on it and expecting to make a profit on it. So they're going to sell it for more. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Then you go in, they're coming in and outbidding you by 10-20%. Mm-hmm. And then later they're going to list it for 30% higher than what your original bid was.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And the thing is, there's a housing shortage.
We're never going to own homes. Well, you do. But I'm never going to own a home.
So there's a housing shortage right now. And a lot of people are pointing to
the value of your house
has
gone up.
It's their fault. They're saying BlackRock bought all the houses. That's why there's a shortage. And people can't get houses because these guys
are. That's why I'm trying to buy some old Applebee's as they're closing. What if we lived in an old Applebee's together?
What if we started an Applebee's?
What if we wait until Applebee's a company goes under and we open a place called Applebee's? Kind of like the Blockbuster. It's not affiliated, but it's, you know.
It only sells
and we're,
the Hot Buffalo sauce.
We're the last Applebee's.
We are your last Applebee's. I mean, I would.
That would be the Apple best.
That would touch my heart. Man, I'm not going to lie. I shouldn't have read that letter. I'm like sad right now.
Oh my gosh.
So anyways, Larry Fink, is once again, he's restored his reputation. That money he's lost, he's made way more for companies time and time again, over and over. The government, again, in 2020, went to him when it was time to do a bailout. So he orchestrated the bailout.
Larry? He just picks it up. That is a lot of influence. If the government trusts you to do that stuff, I mean, like you then have influence over politicians.
Yeah. And listen to this. They bought up or merged with a ton of companies.
And like, if you go to a politician and they're like, well, I don't want to do your bidding. And then Larry Fink is like, well, I own every house in your district. So
if you want a house.
Oh, no, politicians don't live in their districts.
So I mean, if you want a house. They bought up a ton of companies. Some you probably heard of.
Like, I'm saying he could force all the tenants out. He could be like, you won't have anybody in your district.
There's nobody in your district.
That's what I was thinking.
Your district is a ghost town. That's fair. They've bought up a lot of companies that you probably heard of, like Merrill Lynch, Barclays. Let's see, what's another one you probably heard? Citibank Amex.
Jamba Juice.
Hi, welcome to Jamba Juice, a subsidiary of BlackRock.
BlackRock.
But you can't say that. Don't repeat that. What can I get you today?
Hey, thanks for coming into Jamba Juice. We got a special on this. And also, do you own a home that you'd like to sell?
Here's your juicer. Remember, it's the only juice that'll survive a debt crisis.
Jamba Juice, open the whole time. 2020, they didn't close at all. Yeah, we can survive anything.
Not a coincidence.
We're like cockroaches, but like not like, but like in a nice way.
Like if cockroaches were fruity and cold. That is just great.
I'm glad that your laugh's not impacted by your cat allergies.
Thanks. Recently, they have been rebranding themselves.
Yeah.
Because
they've been trying to be like, we're friendly.
Yeah. They own the world. And they want people to be happy about
it. We're not the bad guys.
And so they've had, some people who have been like, hey, your investments, amounts to 9.5 gigatons of CO2 emissions in the world, which is 30% of the total energy emissions in the world. Is BlackRock and companies that they're invested in.
Right.
And so they joined an environmental group and they started trying to improve their ESG score, which is their environmental impact and social justice concerns, things like this. And so they're now apparently shifting away from all of their like coal and oil.
Olin Coil
production companies to try to have a better score in these things. It's a publicity stunt. It's pretty obvious.
Merrill Lynch is the investment group that Bank of America uses, though.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So. And that's the thing.
They're everywhere.
They manage or own a lot of the major banks in the world.
Yeah.
And so it's like... It really is. It really is one of these weird things where it's like these guys are pulling the strings. Like at least
they own my car.
At least the economy, they are deciding how the economy runs, and it's a little sketchy. And so a lot of people are saying, "Hey, we need to deal with these guys." And obviously, those guys are saying, "Hey, we're fine. I mean, we know what we're doing.
We're okay.
We do things well. We've only ever lost $100 million.
Ever.
Ever.
Yeah.
Just that $100 million. We invented." The subprime mortgage, which I mean,
was bad for everyone else.
Name one thing that everybody knows more than that.
Yeah.
You can't.
Yeah.
We were bigger than the Beatles.
We've rebranded the subprime mortgage, you know, and if we can come back from that, think of what we can do for your company. That's the pitch.
That's their pitch. Yeah. So Larry Fink and BlackRock, a little sketchy. You've never heard of them, and that should worry you. He started his career, Larry, started his career with the, da, 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 you know, that stuff. I don't want to do it again. I don't want to do that. I don't want to hit it three times.
I got it.
I
got it. He started with a very extravagant, you know,
yeah.
boasting kind of thing, and they went more quiet.
Yeah, today evil. Today there's a direct quote going around of him, as he's like, I'm a humble man. He's like, I want everyone to know. He's like, I'm the same turd I was 30 years ago. and I think that's exactly how it's going to go. When he rides off into the sunset, he's going to turd his way into his fiddle off. Things I Learned Last Night is a production of Space Tim Media, produced by Christian Taylor, audio by Alex Garnett, video by Connor Betts, our graphics and our logo by Caleb Goldberg, and our social media is run by Caleb Walker. Our hosts are Jaren Myers and Tim Stone. Follow us on your favorite social media platform at Tillin Podcast. That's T-I-L-L-N Podcast. Remember to tell all your friends about us, and we'll see you next Tuesday for another episode of Things I Learned Last Night.